This is the Inland Journal. I'm Doug Nadvornik. In Eastern Washington's 3rd, 4th, and 7th legislative districts, the incumbents are all running for re-election. There's a chance the same group of lawmakers who represented those districts in Olympia this year will also serve next year. But in the 6th, which covers much of Spokane's South Hill, the West Plains, and some areas out north, at least two dominoes will fall. Republican Senator Michael Baumgartner is leaving his seat to run for Spokane County Treasurer. Republican Representative Jeff Holy is leaving his seat in the House to run for that Senate seat, and four candidates are vying to replace him. Also, Republican Representative Mike Volz is facing a challenge from Democrat Kay Murano. So today we'll meet four of the candidates in the races, starting with the incumbent. Mike Volz is the chief deputy treasurer in Spokane County. He's looking for his second term in Olympia. Even though he's a financial professional, he says education is the reason he first ran.
My wife's a teacher. My dad's dad was a teacher, and he was a union rep for public school employees. My mom was a teacher. All three of my kids went through K-12 public schools, and just kind of the roller coaster that the teachers, the education process, the testing, all the changes that were going on, McCleary unresolved. So that was kind of a big issue that compelled me to run, I think, between kind of a commitment to public education and a strong finance background kind of motivated me to run and see what I could do to help out.
And so it was an interesting term to be in Olympia, given the argument about McCleary and the sufficiency of funding for public schools. How did you approach that that debate?
Well, first of all, I served on two of the key committees that address that. I was on the Education Committee, which I asked for, and the Appropriations Committee, which is the big operating budget committee. There's dollars and cents side of it, too, and then there's trying to do the right thing in the policy issue. So I worked hard to balance those out and then analyze the impact of the final bill and make sure we had a good, solid solution. And I tell people, is it the best solution that we could have come up with? The answer is no. But it's the best solution that we could come up with that would meet the requirement of the Supreme Court, which I think is an unfortunate situation to be in.
So with at least that education issue sort of set aside and then the Supreme Court is satisfied, what would be next for you in 2019?
There's an ongoing mental health, public safety, drug issue that's out there that's festering. You know, I've had a number of conversations with Sheriff Knezovich and the folks at the health district about it. We need to get our arms around that and see what that looks like and prioritizing that in the state thing. And it's really a local issue. There's a role for the state, but the work really gets done in the local communities. The other one that's kind of been with the media and the papers is the public records of the legislature. And I walked in the middle. I didn't know that. I've lived under the public records law in the treasurer's office and STA for 20 years now. It's a different environment in there, and there's some different challenges in there. But we need to get a fix. We have a good vehicle. Recently, I've just been appointed to a select committee to actually work on that issue in the upcoming months and into the next year because of my firsthand knowledge of living under the existing law. So we will get hopefully something solved on the public records. Because a lot of them ought to be just like every other government. There is some whistleblower stuff. There is some sensitive stuff. You know, we get emails from victims of all sorts of crimes and stuff. And should that really be pumped out to the headlines? I think most people would probably agree that there should be some sensitivity to these folks that were victims or in horrible situations. So
let's go back to the mental health thing. From what we hear, the approach is to do more of that mental health in smaller community sort of situations rather than larger hospitals like Eastern State and Western State. Do you think that's the right approach?
I think it's a patchwork, and there's a lot of great organizations, public, private, small, medium, large in our community that are working on the mental health and other issues. I think there's a role for the big, you know, Eastern State, Western State hospitals that can't be met in any other setting. But I think it's I think it's a partnership approach, and it really starts with these kind of community-based, whether it's government or nonprofits that are in the community. They know their clients way better than we ever will in Olympia. They know who should be there, who shouldn't be there. They know their names, they know their addresses, and so I think that's where the focus ought to be, is getting resources to these folks on the front lines of dealing with this.
Mike Volz is a Republican seeking a second term as a 6th District state representative. His Democratic opponent is Kay Murano. Murano is the executive director of the Spokane Low-Income Housing Consortium.
It actually started 30 years ago when the nonprofit organizations that do serve low-income folks with housing, so SNAP, Catholic Charities, Volunteers of America, Habitat for Humanity, got together and said, we're all repeating each other's efforts in trying to talk to lawmakers about what our needs are and in trying to talk to the community about, you know, why low-income housing is of value in their community and what that really means. We should have somebody else do this for us. So they started a coalition, and just 3 years ago, I became the executive director for that coalition to be able to, I provide education. And some of that is to developers to say, here's some funding sources that you might not be aware of, or some other ways that, you know, you can look at what zoning we have, and is that going to work with what you're trying to build, especially when we have changes that are coming through. So changes in legislation, changes in city ordinances, to get that information out and try and share it to folks. But then I also talk to community groups when people are trying to build in a specific location, and the community is saying, well, I don't know if I really want that here, or, you know, maybe not in my backyard, to be able to tell them about the benefits and what that would provide for them so that they can be certainly more accepting of it, but also maybe even in support of it because they would realize the value that it could bring. And then finally, talking to lawmakers. I talk to legislators, I talk to city council, I talk to county officials, all different levels, to say, this is what the needs are that we have here in Spokane, but also, you know, how can they help us with that? And what kind of legislation would help us with that? Or, you know, is it funding? What kinds of things do we need to do to better housing for our community?
So I assume that's all behind your decision to run for the legislature.
It has a very large part to play, yes. In the folks that I was serving or helping to get served, I was noticing that there are a lot of groups that really aren't represented. And I was also seeing, you know, how come we can serve this group of people but not those? Or how come we can provide these services but we can't do other things? And the more questions I asked, I kept being told, well, that's how the legislation was written, or that's what the budget line states, so we have to stick to those practices. And I said, well, why didn't they include these other things? And the answer was, they didn't know. No one told them. And I said, oh, I'm going to do this education thing, which is why I started at SLIC, Spokane Low Income Housing Consortium. And I said, you know, I can teach. This is going to be great. So I worked on that for the 3 years. And I thought it was going really, really well, especially talking to the state legislators about why we need more funding in the Housing Trust Fund, which is part of the capital budget. Got both Republicans and Democrats to say, we need more money. And we got people from Spokane, both Republican and Democrat, to write the request letter to increase the amount to $200 million from the, you know, 130-ish that they'd been doing in recent years. And I thought, yes, this is perfect. I've done my job. But that capital budget was never passed. It never came to the floor for a vote because it was held hostage over the water rights bill. And the folks that had the majority said, if you don't agree with us on this water rights bill, we're just not going to pass the capital budget. So for the first time in the state history, we didn't get a capital budget. And I thought, you can't do that. You're lawmakers. You have two things to do. You pass laws and you write budgets. How do you not do half your job and stay employed? So I was complaining to my family, and they said, so what are you going to do about it? And I went, yeah, I can take action. I don't have to sit back and just try to educate and then let someone else take over. I can step up and run. And not just then work to educate others, but actually work to do the job.
Murano hopes to do the job in the state house. She's running as a Democrat against Republican Representative Mike Volz for his 6th District state house seat. By the way, if you haven't yet returned your ballot, we've posted complete interviews with more than 25 candidates and stories about several different races on our website at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Click on the Regional News tab and then the Washington Primary Candidates link. And now to the open House seat in the 6th District. With Jeff Holy leaving the House, four candidates, two Republican, two Democrat, are applying for the job. We'll hear from Democrats Rion Ametu and Dave Wilson. Republican Jenny Graham expressed interest in being interviewed but never followed up to schedule a time. John Aiken Jr. never answered her invitation. And so we start with Rion Ametu. He's a California native who joined the Navy after high school. He worked on submarines. After his six-year stint there, he started looking for a place to live and thought the best opportunities came in Washington. So he moved here and worked a variety of jobs. Now he's studying electrical engineering at Spokane Falls Community College and driving part-time for Uber and Lyft. So why does he want to become a state legislator? Part of it, he says, comes down to finding the identity of today's Democratic Party.
When you talk about like a progressive candidate, what I hear that as is somebody that wants to represent people and blue collar people, you know, people that work at McDonald's and work at, you know, Walmart, people that work in phone centers, you know, the jobs that kind of are looked down upon for some reason. And I don't think people understand or realize that one of the main reasons why these jobs are kind of the staple of the economy is because all of our good jobs left. If you could go and get a union job straight out of high school before in a factory or a warehouse, and then, you know, within a year buy your first house, and that doesn't exist anymore. And so the paradigm shift that's happened within the economy and in regards to someone that works 40 hours a week, I think we need to realize with that paradigm shift that we have to start treating these jobs like they're blue collar jobs, because these jobs are the new blue collar jobs for us. And so we just have to start standing up for these people, making sure that we have a guarantee that says, hey, if you work 40 hours a week and you're working your butt off, then you're not guaranteed to be rich, but you're guaranteed to live a decent life. And I think that's what we need to get back to as a Democratic Party.
So Seattle had a $15, I think still has a $15 minimum wage.
Yes.
Is that something that would work in Spokane, do you think?
I think raising the minimum wage is a Band-Aid. It's not a permanent fix. Well, I agree with the $15 wage, period, but just raising the minimum wage doesn't solve the foundational problem of like say Walmart coming into an area, hiring a bunch of low wage workers, and lowering their prices to destroy all the local and small businesses in the area, and then after those businesses are gone and the competition's gone, then raising their prices back up. You know, there's more of a problem, a systemic problem going on, and that people need to realize that while we kind of look down on those jobs and those the people that work those jobs, Walmart is not paying them a living wage. And so what they end up doing is they have to go on state assistance to be able to survive. So we're subsidizing Walmart's success with our tax dollars. And at the same time, they have tax breaks to exist in whatever the community they exist in. So they're kind of double dipping on our tax dollars in that regard. And so when you think about fully funding education and our taxes get raised, you know, every time we try and find ways to fully fund education, it's like, well, hey, but why don't you start by taxing, you know, Walmart? Why don't you start by taxing Amazon? You know, make the people pay taxes that should be paying their taxes. Make them pay their fair share because we're already paying ours.
So it's, I guess, fortuitous that you mentioned Amazon, because you've probably heard the news.
Yes.
That Amazon is going to build a fulfillment center on
yes,
the
I
West
did.
Plains.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
I think that there is a lot of political maneuvering and chicanery going on to kind of ensure that they bring that warehouse here. But in I would ask the question, in those negotiations, was there a demand for high wage work? Was there a demand for benefits for the employees? I think we need to start asking those questions when these businesses want to start moving here. because I think what we need to start doing is start reorienting the economy to work for normal working families before they start working for business. And so, and that, and when I say business, I mean large business, not small business, because they're getting hammered along with the rest of us. So let me just make that clear.
Rihanna Metu is running as a Democrat for the State House in the 6th District. The other Democrat in that race is Dave Wilson. Wilson is a Midwest native who has lived in Spokane for about 35 years. He founded Interface Computer School, later sold it, and now does some business consulting. Wilson has run unsuccessfully for Congress as an independent, but now he's chosen to run for the legislature under the Democratic Party banner.
I believe in good government. I believe government has an important role to play in our economy and in our society. And it really pains me when I hear people in political office or running for political office do nothing but badmouth government and really try to inhibit it or tear it down. No organization is perfect, none. Through my consulting work, I've learned that every organization has challenges, and government's no different. And it's never going to be run like a business. It's not the same thing, but it plays an important role. And it just really bewilders me when I hear people in office or candidates talk about dismantling the government. Is it excessive in some points? Sure. Do we have to tear the whole thing down? No. Do we need to tweak it? Sure. But so I feel very strongly about that, and that's one of my primary motivations for running, is I think I can help because of my background, and hopefully I'll get that opportunity and we can make a difference.
So you talk about government has a role in the economy. What's that role?
Well, somebody needs to set ground rules, and somebody needs to, you know, if you want to have a civil society, it has to be organized and it has to be structured in a way that there are rules that people abide by and play by. You know, the example I like to use when I'm in a room, I'll ask people, raise your hand if you drove here today. And almost every hand goes up, and then I'll say, all right, how many of you stopped at red lights on your way here? And of course, that gets a laugh, but the point I'm making is we need those kinds of rules to function. So I'm not saying government has to be big and dominating and a big brother, but it also has to be able to function. And so I look at my job as a legislator is to make sure the rules are fair, make sure the regulations are fair, and when they're not fair, listen to constituents, help them if they need help. That's my job, is to help them if they are dealing with overregulation or unfair regulations. And it's, you know, it's an ongoing process. It never ends. And but it doesn't mean we should hate the government or tear it down. So I guess that's what I mean by that.
So are there give me an example of a place where you think government is unfair.
Well, so I just interviewed with the Board of Realtors, and they were telling me that, you know, they feel very constrained by the Growth Management Act, and they feel it's unfair because they're not allowed to develop property that would alleviate, you know, we have a housing shortage. And so their concern is, okay, why are the rules so strict that we can't develop property? And, you know, that's the latest example. You know, my business was heavily regulated. I learned how to operate with regulations, and they're not easy. And the pendulum swings. And sometimes when regulations swing one way, it's because they were necessary, but sometimes they swing too far and there's overkill. And then other times the regulations, the pendulum swings too far the other way and there aren't there's not good oversight, and all of a sudden now you have bad apples or bad actors. And so, you know, there's a sweet spot, but it's a moving target. It's not a stationary target. So you have to constantly be looking at it.
Dave Wilson is one of the two Democrats in the race for an open 6th District State House seat. Jenny Graham and John Aiken Jr. are the Republicans in that race. We weren't able to arrange interviews with them. We'll finish the program by talking with Democratic Representative Marcus Riccielli. Riccielli is seeking a 4th term in the State House from the 3rd District.
I think that delivered on promises to Spokane to help improve opportunities for all folks, make sure that every kid and every family has a shot to thrive. We've been really successful. I prime sponsored the WSU Medical School bill. I've helped bring a transportation package that gets us an excellent rate of return on our tax dollars and over $1 billion in investments in our community. I serve on the Capital Budget Committee, where we've also made significant investments in local community projects that I've spearheaded. And for me, I just want, regardless of the zip code a child is born in, to give them a shot to thrive in our communities. And I'm raising my family right here, and I work at Chaz Health part-time as a project manager, and I'm very into healthcare policy. I think everybody has a right to affordable, accessible healthcare.
So you also, the one you left out was something that we covered this year, and that was to bring health care to Marshall Islands population here. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was quite a journey, and understanding and my passion for making sure that everybody has a right to affordable, accessible, quality health care, and that we can't expect our children to do well in schools, our families to thrive, if they don't have roofs over their head, if they don't have access to health care, and if they don't have food in their stomach. And this is a basic tenet of hierarchy of needs that we need to make sure in Spokane. And I'm pleased to have worked with that community who really brought that and that passion to show that they could organize and get this done. And it was a very exciting opportunity for me to be a part of and help engage on.
Where did that attitude toward, you know, don't leave anybody behind come from in your life?
Honestly, I'm a Spokane kid. It's kind of the attitude in Spokane, partially from my parents and how they raised me, but also my Jesuit education at Gonzaga really instilled in me that value of service to others, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, not to get too into the weeds, but to make sure that that we're taking care of the most vulnerable. It all kind of came together, but really it was a huge influence in my education at Gonzaga University. I went to business school to make as much money as possible, and the Jesuits instilled in me that value of service to others, the ethics, the philosophy, attendance, and it really molded who I am as a legislator and quite frankly as a person.
So I ran across you when I was working at WSU until a year ago when you were working on the WSU Medical School project. How did you make that case, especially when it was a case that really wasn't a partisan one?
Right. Well, we made the case because we need more providers in our community. We just, on this side of the state and throughout our community, we don't have enough folks that are providing access to health care, and we need more doctors. We also need more nurse practitioners, more PAs, phlebotomists, et cetera. But looking at the need, there's really it was a push for a new model as well to make sure that we're going out in those rural communities. People say, well, why do you care in Spokane about the rural communities around you? You represent an urban district. Well, I know if those communities around Spokane don't have access to health care, then they dry up. And quite frankly, a lot of that economic dollars come into Spokane around those communities. So I want to make sure that everybody has access to health care. And I worked with an unlikely partner in Senator Baumgartner. It was one of the most interesting experiences of my legislative career. I had a lot of Democrats within my own caucus, trying to halt it. It was a real dance of legislation, but it shows what we can do in this community when we come together. And I think to this day, that bill that I worked on had one of the highest number of co-sponsors ever. And that was just me, you know, shoe leather, talking to my colleagues and making the case. I was working with both sides of the aisle, but I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. We were able to do that legislative piece of it. This community spent a decade preparing to move a medical school forward. And I'm looking to the future, biomedical research, getting those graduates options for student loan repayment so they can stay in these communities, et cetera. I'm very excited.
Marcus Riccielli is a state representative in Spokane's 3rd legislative district. His Republican challenger, Tom Taylor, didn't return our invitation for an interview. The ballots you've received in the mail must be postmarked by August 7th, a week from today, to be counted. This year, the state is paying the return postage, so you won't need to buy a stamp. You can also return your ballots to one of the ballot boxes in your community. In Spokane County, they're located next to your neighborhood libraries or at the county elections office. Thursday's Inland Journal will be our final candidate program. We'll talk with the candidates for 1/7th Legislative District House race, 1 Spokane County Commission candidate, and a contested race for the Ponderay County Commission, where the proposed smelter has become the lead issue. Thanks for listening to this special edition of Inland Journal, and thank you for your support of Spokane Public Radio. It's your contributions that help us fund locally produced programs like this. I'm Doug Nadvornik.